the Software Process and Measurement Cast number 335. I'm Tom Cagley, your host, and in this episode of the Software Process and Measurement Cast, we feature three columns. The first is our essay on the definitions of four critical words. What do words like effectiveness, efficiency, frameworks, and methodologies really mean? These words get used all the time. However, they really have a fairly specific meaning. Meanings that, once understood and used to guide how we work, can help everyone deliver more value and make our customers more satisfied. The second column is from Joanne Sweeney with another of her stellar Explaining Change columns. In this segment, Joanne talks about content and a framework to guide the development of content. Anchoring the cast this week is Gene Hewson with another of his Form Follows Function columns. Gene extends his mini-series on microservices with a discussion of whether granularity is irrelevant. Lots of content in this installment of the Software Process and Measurement Cast. A quick call to action. Reviews of the podcast help to attract new listeners. Can you write a review of the Software Process and Measurement Cast? Whether you listen on iTunes or any other podcatcher, a review will help grow the podcast. Thank you in advance. Words matter. Four critical Agile words defined by Thomas M. Cagley Jr., Megan E. Cagley. Words are critical tools in the discussion of developing, enhancing, and maintaining software, regardless of how the work is being performed. Terms like methods and frameworks are used to describe how people work. For example, Scrum is typically defined as a framework and extreme programming as a methodology. Often these words are used interchangeably. However, there are times when the perceived misuse of the word can start a barroom brawl. Communication can be constrained by misinterpretation. As organizations begin to compare how work is being done, terms like effectiveness and efficiency tend to creep into the conversation. As with frameworks and methodologies, the issue is that each person in the conversation could have a different definition. Therefore, the ability to compare and contrast experience can be constrained. Words and their definitions matter. Effectiveness. Effectiveness is an important concept that is featured centrally when discussing the performance of processes, teams, and organizations. The problem is that many people don't know what the word means precisely. Wikipedia defines effectiveness as the capability of producing a desired result. The Business Dictionary expands the definition a bit. The degree to which objectives are achieved and the extent to which targeted problems are solved. I use a simpler definition when talking about IT or process improvement projects. Effectiveness is the capability of a process or project to deliver the right thing when compared to the goals of the organization. There are two core questions that need to be reviewed. What is the right thing? And how do we measure effectiveness? The simplest way to determine whether we are doing the right thing at a project or product level is to compare what is being delivered to the organization's vision or goals. If what is being delivered supports the vision and goal, we would tend to judge it as the right thing. At a process level, tracking back to the organization's vision and goal would be difficult, not impossible. Therefore, a tried and true method for judging whether a process or process step is delivering the right thing is to determine whether it adds value to the deliverable. Determining value, unless measured quantitatively, is a judgment call. Once we have a laser-like focus on what the right thing is, we need to determine how we track and measure the right thing. Classic waterfall projects create requirements documents to establish what the right thing is, then enforce reviews and sign-offs for feedback to stay on track. Agile projects build backlogs, involve product owners, and perform sprint reviews to cyclically establish the right thing and to generate a feedback loop to stay on track. All projects want to deliver the right thing so that the organization can reach its goals. The delivery of requirements or backlog items and the value they represent are what needs to be measured to determine effectiveness. Agile projects often identify business value in dollars or other currencies at the feature level. Other types of projects define value at a more macro level, for example, as a cost-benefit analysis. When measuring effectiveness, the question you are answering is, did the work accomplish the goal of the project? It is difficult to directly measure the effectiveness of an IT project because it generally is a component of a larger business product or program. Rather, we generally focus on efficiency measures, cost, time to market, productivity, and velocity. Note, this is a tendency to turn efficiency measures into tactical project goals and then to declare that the project was effective when they are met. But the real goal of very few projects is to be on time or on budget. But the real goal of very few projects is to be on time or on budget. On time might be the real goal if the project is to help the organization deliver a new widget to market, and the metric is whether the new widget was delivered to market when it was promised. Focusing on the business goal of the project provides the basis to determine whether the project was effective or not. Another proxy for effectiveness that is used is customer satisfaction. When measuring customer satisfaction, you can ask the respondent whether they think the product delivered the right thing. Unresolved mismatches mean you were not as effective as possible. A simple workable definition of effectiveness for IT projects is the capability of a process or project to deliver the right thing when compared to the goals of the organization. Adopting the concept of effectiveness is exciting because it forces the adopter to think about the bigger picture. In particular, a focus on the organizational goals that the project or process is striving to support. Knowing that a project is supporting the goals of the organization provides an anchor to generate motivation for the team. Efficiency. Efficiency is a measure of how much wasted effort there is in a process or system. A high-efficiency process has less waste. In mechanical terms, the simplest definition of efficiency is the ratio of the amount of energy used compared to the amount of work done to create an output. When applied to IT projects, efficiency measures how staffing levels affect how much work can be done. The problem is that while a simple concept, it is difficult because it requires a systems thinking view of software development processes. As a result, it is difficult to measure directly. Most processes are subcomponents. For example, unit testing is part of a broader coding process, and coding is part of a broader software development process. Improving the efficiency of unit testing by 10% will not equate to a 10% improvement in coding or a 10% improvement in project efficiency. For example, let's say I become more efficient at unit testing, which means I can run more tests in the same time. Does running more unit tests mean that the organization gets more software? We would have to understand all of the constraints on the flow of work to know whether the efficiency improvement will translate into more delivered functionality. Without understanding how the processes fit together and how the value flows through the project, you can't be sure if any improvement will be transmitted to the bottom line. Systems thinking, a way of looking at the whole thing. And tools like value stream mapping, a technique to analyze the flow of materials and information, are useful when identifying bottlenecks where efficiency improvements will potentially impact the overall project. Efficiency is perceived to be difficult to measure in software development. The idea of efficiency in software development has evolved from the concept of efficiency originally developed in manufacturing, which focuses on the measurement of mechanical efficiency. Technically, the efficiency of a project can be measured as the ratio of the effort the project should take in a perfect world compared to the effort actually required. Perfect effort is, at best, difficult to determine. However, that's what most estimation tools try to predict. Many organizations measure proxies for efficiency, including productivity, velocity, time to market, cost per unit of work. Being efficient in terms of software development processes generally means that we are avoiding waste. Waste in software development includes creating and fixing defects, wait time, overproduction, unused creativity, or extra reviews, to name a few items. Efficiency is hard to measure directly. Therefore, the impact of process changes need to be inferred from other metrics, which may be affected by other changes, such as cost cutting. For example, we would perceive a process to be more efficient if it took less effort or cost to produce the same outcome. Measuring efficiency in software development requires measuring what is being produced by some standard measure, like IFPUG function points, and effort, cost, or project duration. Measuring efficiency is a laudable goal when process changes that improve efficiency of the overall system recovers time that can be applied to delivering more value. The chase for efficiency is not laudable when it isn't applied across the overall system or when it is not tied to real process improvement. Frameworks. While I was attending a recent conference, I heard the term framework used at least 5 times in 5 different contexts in the span of 1 morning. Frankly, I got confused, and looking around the meeting rooms I was in, it was easy to see I was not the only person to be confused. Without a common definition, communication was not possible. Software development frameworks are a scaffold for developing, maintaining, and enhancing software. Values and principles help shape the framework so that specific types of techniques and practices fit into the scaffold. All major buildings begin with a scaffold into which all sorts of things like windows, rooms, and facades are added. The scaffold will only hold the parts it's been constructed to hold. However, each part can be widely varied based on the ideas of the architect and the practicality of the builders. Just think of tacking the facade or windows from MoMA in New York onto the Chrysler Building. The windows wouldn't fit into the Chrysler Building's architecture. The result of that mess would not be fit for use. The scaffold of the building was influenced by the values and principles that the architects chose to express their creative vision. Software development frameworks have the same architecture, a scaffold shaped by values and principles. For example, Scrum is a framework that is molded by the principles and values set forth in the Agile Manifesto. The CMMI is also a framework. Goals that embody values and principles govern each process area in the framework. There are numerous frameworks to develop, maintain, and enhance software. A framework provides a structure for software developers to create and maintain software using a set of practices and techniques that fit into the framework. A framework provides a blueprint to guide you while building software. The techniques and practices you use to fill in the scaffold define how you will build. Methodologies. What is the difference between a software development framework and a methodology? We define a framework as a scaffold for an approach to developing and maintaining and enhancing software. Agile is a framework. A development methodology is a set of principles and values, tools and practices which can be used to develop, maintain, or enhance software. Extreme programming is an agile methodology. Methodologies use frameworks as a roadmap and provide the tools to make the frameworks work. Test-driven development is an example of a framework. The framework outlines a series of steps beginning with developing a set of tests, running those tests, writing the code, rerunning the tests, and then refactoring. Gherkin is a methodology instantiated in a language that fills the gaps of the methodology. It provides the tools that guide how the team will act when it does TDD. Gherkin can be said to be prescriptive. It tells the users of the methodology what to do. Another example is extreme programming. XP is a methodology that includes feedback and planning loops. Principles such as test first, practices such as pair programming, and tool-supported practices such as continuous integration. A methodology specifies not only how the development team should act, but also a specific structure and rules to guide behavior. A framework is not a methodology. However, every methodology needs some form of a framework to give it structure. Methodologies tell you how to achieve a specific outcome within the structure of principles and values. The distinction between a framework and methodology might sound semantic. However, understanding the distinction is important to managing expectations when implementing changes using either a framework or a methodology. Methodologies describe how the work is to be accomplished rather than just the outline of what is to be done. Therefore, methodologies are by definition prescriptive, which needs to be communicated and managed during implementation. Frameworks and methodologies. Software development frameworks and methodologies are roadmaps. Frameworks provide scaffolding based on a set of values and principles. Methodologies augment a framework with tools, processes, and practices. One framework can be implemented by many methodologies, each representing different interpretations of the embedded values and principles. Each different interpretation requires a different combination of tools, processes, and practices. Disciplined Agile Delivery is a methodology that builds on many other frameworks and methodologies, including extreme programming, which also includes a methodology. Even though XP predates the Agile Manifesto, both XP and DAD, Disciplined Agile Delivery, leverage Agile as their core framework. DAD uses a three-phase structure, inception, construction, and transition, with iterations and sprints, stand-ups, demonstrations, and retrospectives as processes in all phases. XP features a flow that begins with an architectural spike, followed by release planning, construction, iterations, acceptance tests, and small releases. Both represent very different implementations of Agile. Methodologies such as DAD provide examples that show that there isn't a one-to-one relationship between software development frameworks and methodologies. One framework can be interpreted and therefore implemented in many different ways. Different does not mean wrong, but it does mean that anyone that wants to embrace a specific framework needs to find or create a methodology that fits their interpretation of the values and principles within the framework. Frameworks and methodologies are systems. Frameworks, methodologies, and systems are tools to create value. They provide guidance for practitioners. It's easy to become convinced that you need the newest, shiniest framework, methodology, or system. The means become as or more important than the ends. While having the right framework is important, in the end, it is the product that gets delivered that's important. As you begin a project, remember that the goal of the project is to deliver value to the organization that is funding the project. When delivering a project, the ends and the means are clearly related. However, the means can't become the goal. Focusing on the end product, the business goal, makes delivering value much more likely. Thoughts, comments, all welcome. Please feel free to shoot us an email at spamcastinfo@gmail.com. Leave us a voice message at 440-668-5717. record a message on your smartphone and send that to spamcastinfo@gmail.com. We look forward to the conversation. Gene Houston, welcome to the Software Process and Measurement Cast.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here.
This returning and exploring your column, the Form Follows Function blog of yours, I think has been a great addition to the magazine portion of the Software Process and Measurement Cast. And if nothing else, I can tell you that the numbers go up every other week.
Glad to hear it. And I'm certainly enjoying it. This is a great thing for me to be able to, you know, reach out to a new audience, and I'm enjoying it.
Super. And I hope people are visiting the Form Follows Function blog at genehewson.wordpress.com. Gene, why don't we start with, you wrote an article, one of the comments that caught my eye was a discussion about whether or not granularity was irrelevant.
Yeah, that would have been the, wait, did I just say Newt was wrong?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, somebody, and it's funny because this is kind of a recurring theme. I believe it was Kevlin Henney that brought this up on Twitter just the other day. People are really quick to pull out the Donald Knuth quote about premature optimization is the root of all evil, or at least most of it in programming. And you know, Kevlin made the point that people tend to whip that quote out without really paying attention to the premature part. And sure enough, the inspiration for this post was somebody doing just that. I talked about, it was a post called Microservice Mistakes, Complexity as a Service. And in that, I talked about the kind of CORBA DCOM fallacy of the location agnostic component. Doesn't matter whether it's in process, out of process, or even all the way over the internet, you're just going to be able to mash up these multiple components no matter where they are, and it's just going to work. And the problem is, it may work, but it's going to work a lot slower when it's three quarters of the way around the world than what it's going to work, or how it's going to work when it's in process. And I talked about having to take into account when you have a component that is likely to be distributed, such as you might do in a microservice or even a traditional SOA architecture. And of course, somebody came along and said, you know, that's a premature optimization. And the fact of the matter is, no, once you're sure that something is very likely to be distributed, it's no longer premature. It's a design decision that you're going to make to either design in a manner that's conducive to being able to distribute it, or you're going to design it in the traditional manner and then rework it when the need to distribute it pops up. And the big part about that is you can actually design in a manner that's conducive to being distributed and still run it in process. You just can't go the other way without rework.
If you were going to be faced with a decision in these kinds of a circumstance, I agree, the word premature is probably the $5 word in that quote. And everyone will have sort of a different take on making a decision early or late and when the right time is. In this circumstance, with knowing something's going to be distributed, how far could you put that off? I mean, at that point, isn't waiting the opposite of premature?
Absolutely. Another quote that seems to pop up along with this one is delaying until the last responsible moment. And that's one, I believe it was Rebecca Wirfs-Brock has spoken out about as well. You definitely want to avoid having to make design decisions when you lack enough information to make the decision. Anytime you have to make a decision in the presence of a great deal of uncertainty, there's risk. By the same token, there's a difference between the point where you have enough information and that idealized last responsible moment. It's kind of like the old Thelma and Louise when you're in the car and you're headed for the cliff. And as soon as you see the edge of the cliff, you're not at the last responsible moment. But the question comes up, how much value is there in delaying hitting the brakes? Yeah. Certainly, you don't want to jump when your information is so scanty that it's unlikely that you're going to make a good decision. But once you have enough information, it becomes a real question as to how much value there is in delaying past that point.
I guess the decision really is driven by how bright that line is. So if I'm going to go over the cliff, obviously the downside risk is substantial. I'm not perfectly able to calculate the stopping distance of a car and to understand whether or not I can actually hit the brakes, the wheels won't lock up, how much tread is there. Even in that metaphor, there are all sorts of characteristics that we would have to weigh in on to know whether or not we were waiting until the last responsible. I guess there's a degree of gray area there that I think causes all of us who are trying to make those kinds of decisions at least a little bit of anxiety.
Absolutely. Since we're on a movie metaphor day, it's like the Dirty Harry line. Do you feel lucky, punk?
There you go. Gene, fantastic. Again, I think everyone should go over to www.genehewson.wordpress.com and take a look at some of these great articles, including the one we just talked about. Wait, did I just say Newth was wrong? Gene, thank you again.
Thanks, Tom. Always a pleasure.
Joanne, we've talked about scheduling, we've talked about message, we've talked about purpose, objectives, all of these things as we've led up this far. What's next? Don't you have to actually have something to put in it?
You do, definitely. Everyone needs some content. And maybe the content is the most frightening bit, especially for people who think they can't write. And of course, content is not just our words. It's also the images that we use, whether they're still images, photographics, or moving images, videos. And personally, I think everybody can create credible content, content that our audiences is going to trust. And I use a tool called Appraisy that does help do this. So Appraisy, it's a framework. You can tell I like frameworks. And it gives a structure. So I use them often when I'm employing someone to write an article, normally a journalist, who I haven't used before. And the Appraisy helps them understand what I want them to produce. I also use them with new clients who I haven't worked with before. And it helps me be absolutely certain that what I'm planning on producing, writing, is what they want. And, you know, project teams can use Appraisy in the same way. So it's a way of checking that your sponsor is happy maybe with the content if you need to do that, or that if you're getting other people to write for you, you're happy with what they're going to write. So let me talk about what I put in Appraisy. So I start with an overview of the topic. So what is the topic that we're going to write on, which is different to the subject or the headline? Then I talk about all the details for where it's going to be publicized. So, you know, where, what date, you know, what page, if that's relevant, you know, all that sort of detail. Then I'll talk about who the target audience is for this particular piece of content. And it will always be a subset. So we think about primary and secondary audiences. Primary audiences are the key people we want to read. Secondary audiences are the other people who are likely to read. Then I talk about the objectives for this piece of content. What do I want people to do after they've read or listened to the content? Something very specific. Then the key messages for the content. Then any images that we've got in mind to go with this piece of content. Not only what sort of image, but where we're going to source it. You know, is it going to, does it already exist in the company library, photo library? Do we need to go to an external stock library, or are we going to commission an image? Then the clearance process. You know, who's going to clear? What are we going to ask them to comment on? What timescale? Again, I typically only ever give people 2 days because that makes it a priority and means they do it straight away. And I only ever ask people to comment on commercial confidentiality and accuracy. And that means if they change style, I can ignore it. And also it means people aren't under pressure to comment on other things that aren't, that they don't need to comment on. Then the sources, the people who we're going to go to get quotes and information, and then an outline of the structure, what we think the structure will look like, just to give the writer some direction. They can ignore it if they want. So that is typically what I would put in a précis. And I would probably write it on 1-2 pages at the max, and it is all about bullet points.
Again, fantastic. So a précis, the listeners can track that down on the internet. Are there other tools that you've used?
I only use a précis. So the précis that I have created myself. The outline is available in my Communicating Projects workbook, which I'll give you the URL, Tom, and then people will be able to access it.
Super. Okay. Well, again, fantastic, fantastic content for the Software Process and Measurement Cast listeners.
In the next Software Process and Measurement Cast, we will feature our interview with the builder of community builders, Yves Anoul. Yves and I talked about agile communities, coaching retreats, why the factory metaphor for IT is harmful, and the future of Agile. A wonderful interview full of information and ideas that can improve how you develop software. Over on the Software Process and Measurement Cast blog, www.tcagley.wordpress.com, we're in the middle of a reread of Goldratt's and Cox's The Goal, a process of ongoing improvement. And we began that back on February 21st, links to all in that series are over there. The Goal has been hugely influential because it introduced the theory of constraints, which is central to lean thinking. The book is written as a business novel. Visit the Software Process and Measurement blog and catch up on the reread. Can you tell a friend about the podcast? If your friends don't know how to subscribe or listen to a podcast, show them how to listen to the Software Process and Measurement Cast and subscribe them. Remember to send the name of the person you subscribe, and a picture perhaps will give both you and the horde you've converted to listeners a call out on the show. All kidding aside, folks, word of mouth is the best way to grow the podcast. Please tell a friend. In upcoming events, in March 26th through 27th, I'll be in London in the United Kingdom presenting at the CMMI Institute Conference EMEA 2015. I'll be presenting Agile Risk Management. Another conference on the list, the QAI Quest 2015, April 20th through 21st in Atlanta, Georgia. We're going to talk about scaling agile testing using the TMMI. DCG, my day job, will also have a booth. By the way, the International Conference on Software Quality and Test Management in Washington, D.C., May 31st through June 5th, canceled. We'll be doing that presentation in San Diego later in the year. The Software Process and Measurement Cast is a proud member of the Tech Podcasting Network. If it's tech, then it's on the Tech Podcasting Network. Check out the Software Process and Measurement Cast and other great podcasts on TPN, www.techpodcast.com. As many of you know, I do at least one webinar for the IT Metrics and Productivity Institute every year. I think this is a very valuable organization. The IT MPI's mission is to pull together the expertise and educational efforts of the world's leading IT thought leaders and to create a single online destination where IT practitioners and executives can meet all of their educational and professional development needs. Well, except for the Spamcast, of course. The IT MPI offers a premium membership that gives members unlimited free access to 400 PDU accredited webinar recordings and waives the PDU processing fees on all live and recorded webinars. The Software Process and Measurement Cast receives a fee if you sign up using the URL in the show notes. Definitely see it in the show notes. All revenues from our sponsor goes to bandwidth, hosting, and new cool equipment to create more and better content for you. Support the Spamcast and learn from the IT MPI. The Spamcast blog and show notes can be found at www.spamcast.net. Contact Spamcast at spamcastinfo@gmail.com. Voice messages can be left at 1-206-888-6111. I also Twitter, and my Twitter ID is tcagley, so please track me down. It's my intent to share all voice messages, emails, Twitters. Your comments, questions, rants are appreciated and will help to facilitate a dialogue and build community. Let me know the topics that you would like to have covered and the people you'd like to get interviewed. Get involved. The music on Spamcast is made available by the PodSafe Music Network at www.podshow.com. The featured song is by 2012 and is titled Last Battle. Information on the band can be found at www.myspace.com/2012vision.com. 2012 does an incredible job with experimental electronica. Be sure to support 2012 and all PodSafe artists. Spamcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 license. If process improvement is a never-ending journey, why do so many people ask, when will we arrive? See you next week.